tragics. We're weekend packers, and we love that's the right. game of golf. And I think that's...
I showed you guys that on the weekend.
Yes, 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 you did. We'll get to that shortly.
G'day, folks. Hope you are all well. It's Steve-O here, back for a Tuesday night live chat special with Golf Days Australia, and I'm joined by Double Pie. How you going, buddy?
Good, Steve-O. How are you, Chop?
I'm not too bad, mate. I've been a bit crook. I haven't been able to get on and on the live chats or on the podcast last couple of weeks. So, I'm all drugged up on cold and flu at the moment. I don't have the Rona, so I'm okay in that sense. But, yeah, I've been a bit crook the last week or so. But, yeah, alive and well and kicking along and happy to be back on a Tuesday night live chat.
You haven't been on the podcast. I didn't notice that. No, it's run seamlessly.
You hadn't noticed it?
No, last 2 weeks may have been fantastic.
I have been tuning in, mate. I've been tuning in. I'm glad to hear that I'm a little missed, but all the same, you guys have done a great job nonetheless. Whilst I've been off, so I've left it in very capable hands. But yeah, we'll be happy, hopefully, to get back onto it next week and join you guys for a bit of a chin wag about some golf. So yeah, looking forward to it. But before we get stuck into things tonight. A couple of little notes. So any of our viewers out there, I've chucked it into the comments. Just click on that link and it'll help us show your name and your profile photo up on screen. If you've got any questions for our special guest tonight, you can pop them in there and we'll bring them up on screen at some stage during the chat. It'll help us show your name along with your question there as well. But also we're partnered with a couple of awesome companies to help us get cranking in these live chats and in our podcasts. So thenetreturn.com.au. Dint Putters, actually spoke with Anthony Dinty today. Pretty pumped for some news from these guys coming into Christmas. So stay tuned for some announcements to come real soon for those guys. Cobra Puma, I'm rocking the Ignite spikeless golf shoes at the moment with the boa. They're so comfy, eh? I can't get over wearing them on the course. My feet used to ache by the 18th, if not beforehand, and these are helping me out, which is quite fun. But also sessionset.com, so current promo for those guys for our GDA members only. Get yourself a subscription and use the codes GDABeer, all one word, all capitals, or GDA Cider, and you'll get $20 off your first case in a subscription. So there's also free shipping in the Sydney metro areas as well. So, yeah, get on board of that. Have you got one with you tonight, Double Par?
Mate, I don't, unfortunately. Fridge is too far away, and I don't know if you heard the podcast. I had a bender on the weekend, so the old liver needs a couple of days to the boys' weekend away sort of killed it. So a couple of days for the liver to recoup, so I'll just be drinking the old sparkling water today.
Yeah, being a good boy. I'm being a good boy as well, actually. I've got a couple of them sitting here ready to go for when I'm a bit over this sickness, but I've got a cup of tea here for tonight's session. But anyway, let's kick off and get into it. Tonight's guest hails originally from across the ditch, but I believe now calls Australia home. He has 4 wins on the Tour of Australasia, 2 on the Nationwide Tour, and has 3 times played in the Open Championship. He joins us now all the way from WA. Michael Long, how you going, buddy?
Thanks, Steve-O, and Double Par. Nice to be on tonight.
Yeah, great. It's really good to have you. And obviously we shot out a message to you, and straight away you pretty much responded, said, hey, give me a buzz on this number and we'll get a chat going. So, yeah, it's great that you're so receptive and quick on the reply too, mate. So really appreciate you jumping on board and having a chat with us.
Yeah, always love to have a chat. And like most, a lot of professional golfers down this way, we've got a lot of time on our hands. So we're only too keen to get involved and do something different.
Yeah, fantastic. All right, well, let's kick off into it. Before we get right into talking through your career and extensive career at that, we've got a little ice-breaking segment that we call the Quickfire Par 5. So 5 quick questions to reach the hole, couple word answers, and we'll get it through to a par. So first question up, do you have any golf particular superstitions at all?
No, I reckon I've got enough going on in my head without starting developing superstitions to live by. So I'll try and keep as many thoughts out of my head as possible.
Yeah, nice. I like it. All right. So question number two, 7 iron carry distance, no wind.
Well, I've just gone new Titleist irons, the T400s, and I'm now up to about 165, 170 metres.
Yeah. And you're still in metres, not yards?
Yeah, always been metres.
Always been metres?
Yeah.
Yeah, nice. All right. Question three, bit of left field. Favourite movie?
Oh, good question. I love all of them, but I like Die Hard. As a friend explained to me, it's a good old-fashioned Western, but set in modern times. And I just love the lone guy against all the bad guys.
Nice, especially coming into Christmas very soon. It's a great Christmas movie. I love it. All right, question four. First tee box, standing over the ball, what are you thinking?
Take my time. It goes in a blur. So I just want to take it away slow and just take my time, teeing it up, you know, step into it slowly and just swing slowly.
Yep, nice. Holes in one. How many?
Oh, I've had, let me see, be three.
Three?
I haven't made a cent from any of them. No, I tell a lie. I was playing one club skins and I managed to bumble a 3 iron along the ground, and with my one club skin I had chosen, my one club. And I bumbled along the ground on a 145 meter hole, went in the hole, and I won $42.
Skins, that's, I love it. Would that be your favorite ace?
No, I had one on the PGA Tour, so that sort of trumps it. But that it was just cool to take $42 off my friends.
Yeah, no worries. Where was the ace on the PGA Tour?
No, Tahoe Open.
What? Sorry.
Lake
Which one?
Reno Tahoe Open.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Nice. And what actually, hole? How long?
It was probably about a 7 iron, and we're towards the back of the field, it's a blind hole sort of up there. The hole's raised, and it was blind, and there's one guy standing around there on the back, because literally we were the last group out on the golf course, wander up there. I'm looking around the green. Where's my ball? And he just says casually, "It's in the hole, mate." And I said, "Thank you very much." It was actually the only hidden regulation that back nine. So there you go. One green, hole one, and all the rest. I miss. I had to chip and putt for my pars and bogeys for the rest of the nine.
Yeah, nice. DP, have you got a bonus question for Michael?
I don't know if I've got a bonus question. I'm just going to challenge. Is that really a green in reg if it goes in the hole? Because it hasn't landed on the green, has it?
I claimed it. I don't care. I'm sure Stackhouse did, but that was scary. Actually, I ended up only making the cut by one shot in the end. So thank goodness that one went in the hole.
Oh, yeah, brilliant.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the only stat you can claim is an eagle. That's the only thing I'd be claiming on that hole.
I've actually had three albatrosses, so that's kind of cool. So there's something different. So I reckon they're probably even a little bit harder than hole-in-ones.
I agree with you on that one. And look, I'm normally looking for your worst scores and your double pars, but tell us about these albatrosses. Where were they?
Well, actually, one of them was in the Coolum Classic way back, probably about 97. And it's the eighth hole, which now no longer exists, and I had a driver, and I think it was downwind, and I hit a 7 iron, and again, I don't know if anyone remembers that hole, but the green, half the green sort of hidden behind the hill. Same type scenario. We're one of the last three, four groups coming in. I've rocketed this ball up there, and I can't see it on the green. And I'm wandering through the back, and again, there's one of the volunteers, and thank goodness we have these volunteers. But he has not got out of his seat, has not done a thing, and I'm about to walk past him. He says, "Your ball's in the hole." That was it. So, so there was one there. And, where was the other one? I can't remember, but that one stuck in my mind. And actually, my mate, Brad Forrester, who played on to the same time, because I got a little bit of, I think I won the New Zealand Open the week before. So I was on a bit of a roll, and that got a little bit of airtime, and then he played maybe January of next year and something like the Australian Open or one of the big tournaments there, in Albatross, and he got one line in an article and I managed to get a whole paragraph. So he was a bit miffed at that.
Nice.
I'm sure he was. You started already into your professional career and mentioning the New Zealand Open, but let's go back to the beginning. How did you kick off in golf? Where'd you start?
Well, I played all my, as you said in the intro, I'm from across the ditch. So I played all my amateur golf in New Zealand and when I look back on it now, I had a really good record in New Zealand amateur wise. But even with that back then, it was sort of like if you turn pro, you were the enemy, or you were somehow doing a disservice to New Zealand golf. So it was all very hush hush. And I won the New Zealand amateur, and I beat a guy, Dave Podlick, who was a hell of a player. And someone said I can turn pro. So up until then, I'd actually, in my final year of uni, I had about three job interviews I was going to go for and stuff like that. And someone said, you could turn pro without going to the tour school. And I thought that was a good idea. I thought, you know what? I want to go and play golf for another 2 or 3 years and just play golf and see what could happen. Because I knew if I stayed amateur, I'd get a career. I'd miss one or two trials. And before you know it, I'm kicked out of the New Zealand squad because I haven't turned up to the trials, and there'll be some guy, some young kid in there who would take my spot. And I knew I could beat them. So I thought I'd take matters in my own hands. And that's pretty much it. I was finished uni, went to the Eisenhower Cup, and then announced the next day that I'm turning pro. And that was pretty much it. And I still remember the first event I went into, the New Zealand, Air New Zealand Shell Open. This was back then, Titirangi, back in 1990. I was a reigning New Zealand amateur champion, just finished third in the World Eisenhower. Out in New Zealand, finished second in the team, so that was even better. And I was pre-qualifying Monday morning it wasn't the Grange, it was another golf course, Mungakiki Golf Course, I think. And I was pre-qualifying to get into what was considered one of our biggest tournaments in New Zealand. And so pretty much from the word go, there was no sort of easy ride into it. It was like just jump in with both feet and see whether I can sink or swim.
So what point did you come across the ditch? Did you spend a couple of years pro in New Zealand, or did you find there was more opportunity in here?
No, it is. So pretty much when I turned pro and I had my New Zealand amateur win, so that allowed me direct access onto the Australasian tour. So first tournament was Air New Zealand Shell Open. Then I think we went across and played Riverside Oaks for maybe the PGA or something like that. Maybe then up to Coolum. To be honest, I made a complete hash of it. I made the cut in New Zealand Open, Air New Zealand Shell Open. And then I pretty much had a season you would not care to remember. Because then it was the wraparound, so you basically go from October through to about March. January was all the Japanese co-sanctioned events, so I never got starts in January. So I had about three or four before Christmas and about four or five after then. And before you knew it, the season was over in about mid-March, April, and I was getting ready to go to tour school back in October. So it was not a wonderful start, but thankfully I went to tour school and managed to get through that. And I very quickly learned, because back then we were playing, basically if you made the cut, you didn't have to pre-qualify for the next event on the Australasian tour. So the big incentive for me was to keep on making cuts. And after my first year, I realized this pre-qualifying lark is that's way too hard. I'm an awful pre-qualifier. I really haven't been great at pre-qualifying ever. So then I thought, well, you know what, I'm just going to try and make as many cuts as I can. And that's where I sort of started to understand a little bit more about playing golf, the making money so you can survive the next week, and just really planning your weeks out. And probably what I ended up doing was became really good at making cuts and then probably not finishing tournaments off. So then that was the next progression in my career. So it's all sort of, it's always a learning experience, and even now you're still learning so many different things.
It seemed like a pretty natural progression for you. So you had a fairly decent amateur career, you know, winning the under-18s New Zealand in 85, under-21s 88, under-23s 89, and then the NZ Amateur in 1990, and then obviously turning pro from there. So it seems as though reading through a lot of this, it would have just been a natural progression into professional golf for you anyway. And, you then head into and start turning pro, as you talked to there. Was there an idol for you growing up through that era?
Oh, I love watching Tom Watson and Nicklaus, those guys. Not really an idol. I enjoy playing golf. I enjoy the competition. I enjoy that stuff. Things have sort of changed a little bit. I was fully committed to university. I went to a 4-year degree. I mean, when I won New Zealand Amateur, I basically played 9 holes in 2 weeks. And that was my preparation before I went down to play in New Zealand Amateur in 1990 when I won. So it was just one of those things. Golf wasn't my life. I fitted golf in around my other things I was doing. So basically, when I turned pro, I thought, how does anyone fill in 8 hours a day hitting golf balls and playing golf? To me, it was just grab the clubs out, go and play, shoot as low as you can, and have a few laughs, and then, you know, get ready for the next day. So I found probably that a little tougher than actually playing the golf. I just love playing golf, and never was really worked really hard on the range when I was younger. Then, obviously, once you turn pro and you start realizing that all of a sudden you're a small fish in a really big pond, and you may have to just sort of step it up a little bit. And then so I sort of worked my way out and tried to find out what worked best for me. But at the beginning, it wasn't really natural. I was a complete amateur. I really was an amateur golfer. But you know, I enjoyed it, and I enjoyed the competition, and I still do, and played to my best ability. Then you sort of turn professional. I think Frank Knott basically did me best, or one of the guys who explained it to me, because I was having a bit of a tough time of it, you know, early on. And basically, he said your career starts out. You start out at the top. You turn professional. You're a great amateur. You turn professional, and you sort of go full circle, and you come back to the same spot as you were as an amateur. Just a little more professional in what you do. And that's pretty much where I got to. It took me 3 or 4 years to actually get back to where I was and start playing golf a little more professionally than probably as I did as an amateur.
Yeah, because I was going to get to it in a minute or two when we talk about the NZ Open, but it looks as though for the first several years of your professional career, you're only averaging sort of 7 events a year. You weren't competing that many times through the first several years. And I know, DP, I'm sort of cutting your rug here, but your first 2 wins come in 92 of your professional career, that is. And you had the Southwest Open in Australia and the New Caledonia Open. And then you fast forward a little bit, and I want to get to this because obviously this is quite important for you, but the NZ Open in 96, it seemed like everything after that just skyrocketed in terms of number of events you're entered into every single year. You then head off to the Open Championship. I don't want to talk anymore about it. I'd love to hear your perspective of that, because it sounds as though that really sort of made it take off for you.
Yeah, you're right. It was sort of it was one of those things. I struggled for the first couple of years, and then I the Southwest Open gave me a little bit of belief and a little bit of cash. And then 3 weeks later was the New Caledonia Open. And so basically for the first 2 or 3 years, I sort of understood, you know what, I can carry on for another year here. I kind of like what I'm doing now and then. But the hard thing is, coming from Australia and New Zealand, is the lack of four-round events. And I was always told, if you can't play four-round events, you play three-round events. And you can't play three-round events, you play two-round events. So I never, that was my focus. So I'd travel wherever I could to go and play two and three and four-rounders. And there weren't many four-rounders at the level I was playing at. So, you know, I'd be in Malaysia playing on the TDC Tour, which I don't think that exists anymore, Tourist Development Corporation of Malaysia. And, yeah, we'd be playing in the Sultan's backyards and all these different provinces in Malaysia. And if I got hot water in a place, that would be great. And it was, I look back on it now, and it was really, really exciting. But I just had this thing that I had to just play two and three rounders and try and learn to play golf and play it as a professional. So in fact, so for the first three, four years, I actually didn't file a tax return in Australia. So I thought after about the third, fourth year, I better file a tax return in Australia. So I filed this tax return. This is how badly it was going. The government, I think, gives me $12,000 back. I got $11,000 back. So I'm like, wow. And I've just, and myself and my wife, we just bought our first house. and I said to her, what do you think we should do? Do you think, you know, put it, lock away? Because I always, there's two things you always should do is, well, I don't believe you should do. You shouldn't mortgage your house, and you should never buy a one-way ticket anywhere, because if things go really bad, at least you can jump on a plane and come home. And don't mortgage your house because you need somewhere to live when you're back home. So she's been wonderful and caring, and she's supported me so much. She says, no, let's go to the US tour school. So I went to the US tour school. I actually got exempt to the second stage. In my first tour school I went to, I got paired in the second stage with Andy Bean, and we played at a golf course in Miami. So that was a thrill playing with Andy Bean, because he was one of those guys when I was growing up. He featured in a few majors and stuff like that, and the Nicklaus and the Watson era and stuff like that. So that was really kind of cool, and I got through that stage and I made the final stage. So, make a really long story short, I got my card. So now I'm on the Nike tour. So this was, this would have been 95. So it was 96, beginning of 96. I'm at this Nike tour. And I thought, right, I've got my card in America. I go across there. And I had no idea how it worked. And I was a conditional player. So basically what happened was I missed just about every cut or every pre-qual. I got into one tournament. I made that cut, finished dead last, and the rest I had to pre-qualify in because my number wasn't good enough to get in these events, and I missed every pre-qualifying. But what I had done is I had actually played a two-rounder event just to make ends meet, and I won it, and I won this money. So I put it in what's called the Bank of America. And at that time, I didn't realize that it was only a Californian bank. It wasn't nationwide.
All right.
So I step off, I go to Louisiana, and I get a, you know, I ring them up about a week later, and I say, yeah, just come into the bank, give us your passport, some ID, sign a form, and you'll be fine. I said, well, I can't do that. I'm in Louisiana, Mississippi, and there is no way I can get back across. And so this went back and forth. But now I've got $2,000 sitting in the bank account, and I've got none with me. I am flat broke. And I don't know what to do. Well, actually, I'm not flat broke. I've got $200 in my wallet. So I decided there was some pay-for-play money events in the area. And I thought, well, I've got to keep on playing, so I'll play them. So I went to the guy. I said, look, I don't quite have enough money, but I've got in a bank account. I'm trying to get it out of there. And as soon as I do, I'll be able to pay for it. Do you think I could enter the tournament with much money? Well, you know, not paying the entry fee. And he was really good. He did this 3 weeks in a row for me because I still couldn't get the money. but that is the most pressure I have ever been on. So basically with that $200, I had to pay my, I think it was a $350 entry fee, had to pay for my hotel accommodation, had to eat, and then had to then get to the next pre-qualifier, which I consequently missed. And then I ended up back in the same position. So for 3 weeks in a row, I finished top four in the middle of Mississippi against all these guys or these local guys. And I mean, 1 week, well, the final week, we ended up eating baby food because I couldn't afford it. All I had was, you know, $10 left, and that's all that was on the shelves there in this station, this petrol station, and that. And that's all. And we ate that three nights in a row. Again, I finished top four. I was able to pay my debts off each week and just survive by the skin of my teeth. And in the end, basically, I couldn't take much more of this. I know Kerry couldn't. She was absolutely, it was the most stressful time
I've ever been. Bet.
And so we came back to Australia, basically paid off some debts, borrowed a bit more money. I actually had quite a good little May circuit over there, West Australian Open, West Australian PGA, paid off my debts and borrowed some more money and went back across again and had another go. And I was slightly more successful towards the end of, you know, around July, August. But still finished third in my last Nike event, which meant I came back to Australia just evens. I'd spent a whole lot, got a lot into debt, but I was I didn't owe anyone any money, which is fantastic. But what that showed me was that I didn't realize until I looked back on it many years later that that was probably the catalyst of why I played well in that summer, because all of a sudden I can survive. I realize I can survive. Yeah. I didn't owe any money. There was none of that money pressures. All I had to do was go out and play some golf, hole some putts. And I'm not going to say it was easy, but there was just probably a shift in focus on what I've been doing before. And all of a sudden that was it, you know.
Yeah.
It all sort of turned, but I still look back on that 3 week period. If I had made one bogey or one double bogey, all of a sudden, I'm owing
could have made the difference.
I am in the middle of Mississippi. Sorry to make a story go long, but that for me was where it all started.
No, it gives you a good insight there. But let's get back to the NZ Open and have a chat about what that event was for you. So talk us through the Open itself and how the win came about. How'd you play that? Obviously, you played well through the tournament, but what was the competition like and how did you go throughout the days?
So the week before, this is where it really started turning really big time for me. So the week before, I'm in the final group of the Greg Norman Holden Classic. I'm playing with Pete Senior, final group, and it's pouring down rain. We're playing Royal Melbourne. Pete ended up winning it. Greg Norman was second and I was third. And to me, that was just unbelievable. I paid $40,000. It was just, but more so, I found Pete Senior, I just love playing with Pete. He's so competitive. He brings out the best in you. And I just enjoyed the whole experience of being at the top end of the field, playing with these guys and beating it. And I still love playing with Pete. He's one of the greatest competitors and one of the greatest golfers Australia's ever had. So then rolling New Zealand Open, I've got a pocket full of cash now. I'm feeling quite good about my game. The putter's going okay. I think I got paired on that. I was paired with Michael Campbell and I can't remember the other person I got paired with. That next lot of era of players coming through. So it was Peter Leonard, Paul Gow, Rod Pampling. Who else was there? I mean, it was just next wave of players coming through. And it was fun. I got a great start. I carried that form on from the Sunday. I then, three or four holes into it, Michael Campbell which I find a bit hard because he's a great putter as well. I mean, we're all, you know, pretty good putters. And I hold another birdie putt from about 20 feet. He says, "Oh, I see how you finished up there last week." I go, "Yeah, I know, it's fun, isn't it?" And you know, from there, I had a good solid opening round, and that was great. I think I got into the lead after two rounds. And I can't remember whether I played with Pete O'Malley the final round, but I can't remember who I played with in the third round. And that was a shaky one for me. Third round was shaky. I think I chipped in from over the back of one green, about number five, where I had no right to, or I got it up and down. Some fairly freaky stuff. But I was just hanging on by my fingernails. And I remember on the 14th, I got the wind all completely wrong. I think it's the 14th. Yeah, 14th is par three down the hill. And I've hit it OB. I've hit it right through the green. Through the back of the green, and the fence is right there. It's like, oh, I don't want to do this. I then probably took one club. I think I stayed with the same club, but I hit this one a little bit better. Although I got the wind right and hit it to about 6 feet and made bogey. So I just did a couple things like that that kept me one or two behind going around.
Peter O'Malley, and yeah.
Peter, man, once I'm in the final round, I'm okay. Jamie, if I get a chance, I'm okay. And just slowly built the round, and I just kept my head down, trying to make as many good shots as possible. And the only time I asked on the 10th hole, and I asked Carrie, my wife, she was caddying for me. I said, "How am I going?" She's going, "You're going okay." I thought, that's all I need to know.
Yeah.
So I knew I was in there, and then the 18th hole has got OB up the right. Now, I didn't want to know anything until I hit that shot. And once I hit that tee shot up the 18th hole, I've gone, okay, where am I standing now? And I think I had about a 3-4 shot lead. And I've gone, okay, that's what I'm doing. So that was all right. Yeah. Up until then, I didn't want to know what was going on.
Yeah. Wow. And the jubilation after finishing that hole, Did you know at that stage, were you in the last group to come home on Sunday?
Yeah, I was in the last group, and I think Kiwi hadn't won it for a number of years, so the locals were hanging out for it. Got a few of them, Aussie mates, and they all reckon that the Kiwi crowd was a little bit biased and a little unruly towards him, and they were biased towards me. I don't know, but I remember it was great fun. I didn't quite tear up, but we had to part the crowd so I could get to the 18th green and the cheers and whatever. And it was a wonderful evening. And ended up in downtown Wellington and having a great old time.
Yeah, very good.
What time did the celebrations finish, Michael?
Oh, I really don't know. I know that they closed the bar on us. Not that I was absolutely plastic because I want to enjoy it, but I know they did close the bar on us at some point there, and we had to order room service. So those things, yeah.
Did you get the keys to the city? What did they do? What did they celebrate? Front page of every newspaper.
It was front page. Yeah, New Zealanders. New Zealanders like Australians. We all love sport, and it was a big event. It's a wonderful place, Paraparaumu, and golf is held in quite high regard by golfers over there. And I had a few TV interviews and stuff like that next morning, and papers and stuff like that. It was great fun, and that was sort of the start of it. Yeah,
it was definitely the start. And you talk about that 97. You played in your first Open Championship. That must have been a bit of a highlight.
That was fantastic, yeah. So I think I finished third on the money list. So I got an exemption straight into the Open. And I got paired with Lee Jansen and Constantino Rocca. So that was a pretty neat pairing first up. Open, and then you get paired with those guys. And it was fantastic. And I had a chance of bumping in with Lee Jansen on the senior tour over in America, the Champions Tour. And I was telling someone that Lee Jansen is he's the best major club chucker I've seen. Because he had a couple instances there where things didn't go right, and the club sort of went back to the bag rather firmly. And I said, "Oh, yeah, you got to tell Lee, because he will love that story." And true enough, he says, "Yeah, really, really, tell me what I did. What was it? how was the throw? I said they were good throws, and it was great fun. We actually both missed the cut by one shot and one person there. So there was 70 guys made the cut on the mark. So it was good fun.
And Tiger was in town, wasn't he? Young 21-year-old? Just
was that no, his... I think that was a little bit later.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah.
Because you played in played in three in total, 97, 98, and 99. Yep.
Oh, sorry, in the Open. Yeah, he may yeah. well have been there. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I thought you mean New Zealand Open. No, the Open, yeah. To be honest, it's all a whirlwind in terms of it was great that I was exempt and I was able to sort of prepare and get accommodation and that. But this is another level up, and I'm just trying to keep my feet on the ground and just do my thing and do the best I can. And it was a great golf course. The weather was pretty tough that year, but it always is in an Open. They're fantastic. You get the chance to play an Open, a Lynx golf course on the Open Rotor. You've got to do it because they are something special and unique. They really are fantastic.
So 97 played in the Open Championship. You also had probably your best finish. You runner up in the Johnny Walker Classic.
Yeah, yeah.
Ernie Els knocked you over there. Yeah, tell us about that one.
Yeah, I mean, that was great fun. So I think I'm in the run of making a whole lot of cuts. So, but the Johnny Walker is the big one. It's there. It's on at Hope Island. And it was a wonderful field. You know, we had Montgomery, Freddie Couples, Ernie Els, who was number one in the world at the time, Faldo. It was a fantastic event. It was a really good event to get a lot of world ranking points. I think we would have had close to maybe 8 out of the top 10 in the world at that time. It was a huge event. Of course, I'm sort of got a chance, the opportunity to get in the tournament. I'm not one of the marquee groups. I'm sort of just outside that. And I put together two very nice rounds of 68 and having a whale of a time. So the final two rounds, I get paired with Ernie Els. And again, playing with these wonderful players, Ernie Els, you know, number one in the world, it's one of those things where you've just got to focus on what you can do, because he sort of downwind. I just remember him bombing it and into the wind. I was doing really well in the wind, and I probably got him into the wind. But just the aura. All these players, they're all wonderful people. They know Ernie Els knows who's Ernie Els is. He doesn't need to try and prove it to anyone. Not that he's arrogant. He's a wonderful person. Just have this aura about him, and you sort of just got to be careful you don't get intimidated by that or sucked into it and stuff like that. So I can honestly say for 36 holes that I played with Ernie Els, I probably wouldn't be able to remember a shot he hit or how he hit or something like that. I told myself before I teed off, I'm just not going to watch him, which seems a little strange, but that was the only way I could handle and keep myself doing what I wanted to, because I really wanted to win. You get this opportunity, you got to try and take it. So that was what I did. The only time I watched him hit a shot, and I'm sort of daydreaming, it's the 11th hole, was par 5, or 11th as we played. I think it's number 2 now on the rotor they have. And I think he might have missed a little bit. Anyway, I've got him by 20 into the wind, and he's pulled out 3 wood. And I just remember standing up there, that beautiful swing, and smash, he just smashes 3 wood right to the front edge of the green. And I've just watched it, and I've gone, wow, that is pretty cool. And all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, hang on a minute. Hey, what are you doing, you idiot? And I think he birdied the hole. I parred it. I then think I went and bogeyed the next. He parred it. So all of a sudden, there was a two-shot swing where I just sort of let my guard down, and I sort of drifted off a little bit from what I wanted to do. And then I think he may have – we then sort of made a couple pars coming up, but he made that little one-shot lead there. And then I don't know whether you're trying to allude to what happened with my ball moving. I don't know whether I'm sort of getting ahead of myself.
Talk us through that. The 15th hole, yeah?
So yeah, it was the 15th. So we had that little episode there. So now I'm now one behind, and we both scramble pars on the next two holes. And in fact, on the actually, Ernie might have gone two ahead of me, and then I par the next one after the par three. I par that one, and I get it back down to one shot. So I've got the honour. Now I hit this awful shot in the par three. It was awful. It was only a 9-iron, 8-iron. 9-iron probably, and I've lost it right. And I thought, oh god, here we go. Number one world player, he's gonna make me pay for that. He misses the green as well. We both scramble par, so we get up onto the 15th, and we both hit good drives down there. And hitting my second shot in, I'm first away. I hit my second shot in there, and I hit it onto the edge of the green. It's just on the green, but only just. And I'm thinking, well, I'm a long way away. I'm about 40, 50 feet. I'm thinking, well, Ernie's going to. He's going to hit one on the green. This is what the greats do. He hit his shot 20 yards offline. It was awful. And I thought, I tell you what, I reckon I'm in here with a chance. I reckon Ernie's not quite happening. So I'm really, I'm trying to contain myself because I reckon I've got a chance here. And he hits a good chip, you know, and it's wet and there's not many people around. There's a crowd, but it's wet. Everyone's under umbrellas. Hits a good chip shot up to about 8 feet, 8-10 feet. And I'm over my ball. I've sort of looked around and there's a little run of Kaikuya and my ball sort of perched on top of that. And I was a little bit wary of it. And stand over it, have a final look at the hole, and I line up with a dot on my ball. I look back down and my dot has now moved. It's now gone. I can't see it. So I've gone, oh no, my ball's moved. And that's when I said to Ernie, I pulled up and said, Ernie, my ball's moved. He says, what do you mean, cuz? I'm going, no, it's moved. He says, you sure about that? Yeah, I'm sure. He says, no, it hasn't. I said, yeah, no, it's moved. So I get to replace it and I actually hit a really good putt and it looked out. But all of a sudden, now you're giving the number one world player, number one player in the world, a chance to make an 8-footer to go two shots, which he duly does. He holds that. So now, all of a sudden, that one shot penalty, I'm now two behind again. And then he birdies next, makes a wonderful birdie up 16. And so now I'm three behind. And down the 17th, again, he misses an iron, makes par on the par five. I birdie it, so I'm only two behind, and the only place he can't miss it on the last is left, and he's missed it left. And I'm thinking, well, he's going to make bogey there unless he holds a wonderful putt. So I'm thinking, now or never. I hit this shot straight up and down the flag, but it was half a club out. I then hit the putt, and it sort of died in front of the hole. Probably wasn't ever getting there, but for a long time there, that putt held my interest, and I thought, you know what, I could be in a playoff here, and it just didn't quite, and lost by one shot. So a lot was made of it. It's just part of the game. I got a lot out of it. From then on, I got to meet royalty. It got me starts in Europe. It was a wonderful way to raise my profile and get on starts, and through that I won a Fair Play award and met royalty. It helped me gain invites into the European tour because through that it was a co-sanctioned event with Europe. So now I've got status in Europe, but I don't have full status. And so look, I mean, I was rapt to finish second. It was a wonderful field, and if someone said you're going to finish second at the beginning of the week, you're going to get your status in Europe and you're going to be able to play golf, I said, fine, I'm done. And look, I would have loved to have won, but it wasn't there.
So how does it sit with you that rule's actually changed now, hasn't it? So you would have been able to replace that ball without incurring the penalty.
It's like a lot of things in life. I'd love to have another go at everything all over again. Nothing I can do about it. And look, I think it's I think it's a good change to the rule. It's because this whole grounding the club, have you set up to the ball, this, you know, it's sort of up to the player to own up. Well, now it's a little more clear, black and white. Okay, if the ball moves, just replace it. If you didn't knock it, you didn't cause it to move, no problems. Let's just replace it and go again. But there was always a little grey area whether the player had addressed the ball, what constitutes addressing the ball, etc. So it's just cleared it all up. But, you know, that's fine. I think it's a good change to the rules. It's just makes it clearer.
Definitely. And mate, the attitude is the right attitude. The rubber the green, you're always going to have things bounce your way and not bounce your way, and you can't dwell on them. So, mate, big ups to you.
Yeah, thanks. Look, I mean, it's the way I sort of approach golf, the way I go into tournaments. I think you need to have luck to win a golf tournament. Yeah, it's the same with these sandfield divots. Should it be GUR or not? You know what? It's just rub of the green. Luck happens. And just because you smashed a ball 300 meters down the fairway in the sandfield divot, what, you know, why should you? I mean, if it ends in a divot, so what? That's just part of the game. But
I think we've talked about that before on the podcast, that one in particular sort of had come up on the podcast. And I think one of the things I come back to on that one is, you know, when is a divot not a divot? You know, what constitutes it? You know, the grass growing back over enough for it to no longer be a divot. But That's certainly an interesting one, and the rule change there makes a difference. And we have seen a few of them sort of get picked up, you know, this year. And John Rahm more recently, it was easy for him to penalise him, although, you know, there was no intent. It obviously had, you know, had moved or deemed to have moved position. He won by a few shots, and that was easy for him to penalise him, but he certainly had no idea until he'd finished.
Look, I mean, look, the rules are always changing. I don't know. It's I'm sort of like the attitude of you tee it up on the first hole, you go and chase it. Whatever happens, happens. It's an outdoor sport. We play in different wind conditions, grass conditions. It just all changes. And look, I'm a big believer, to win a golf tournament, you don't play perfect golf. It's, well, for me anyway, it's like I'll get away with one. I've missed a fairway, hits a tree, comes back out. All of a sudden, I ride that luck and hopefully I can turn it into a win. And I just believe in luck. I don't believe that it's you know, just because you've hit a great shot, you should be entitled to something. It's you know, rubber the green.
So maybe moving forward to your next win, the 99 Greg Norman Holden Invitational. What was that one? What was that one like? Talk us through that one.
Well, that was different again. So I'm sort of struggling a little bit with my game. I'm not 100% with it. I'm sort of missed a couple cuts in there. Probably come back from Europe. Haven't had my greatest year in Europe. And so really, to be honest, I'm sort of just thinking, look, let's just get into this tournament because it's a big money event. Let's just get into it and get our teeth in and see whether I can just slowly build some confidence, momentum in my game. And I make the cut by about two or three shots. It wasn't anything outstanding, but something sort of, again, something just clicked Friday night, and I come out Saturday and I just play well. And I actually can't remember what I shot, but I remember I shot a low round and I just had it going, and I go to the range afterwards and yeah, it still feels good. It's, you know, like, bring on tomorrow. I'm looking forward to it. And then the next day, this southerly buster comes in at 10:30. Actually, I was a little bit wary of my game. So the week before, we played at New South Wales Golf Club. I'm in the final, not in the final group, but I'm up there top 10, something like that. It is howling. And I think I was lucky to break 85. I don't know what I did, but I went from top 10 down to about 50th. So I am shattered. You know, confidence is a bit shattered after that. And if you've played in the wind, it's really sometimes hard to get you back into what you were doing before. I find it sometimes hard because I hit the ball quite high. But generally, I'm a pretty good wind player. So this really rocked my confidence a little bit. So, you know, start out the Greg Norman. The Greg Norman, just slowly get it. And then, so what happens is 10:30, all of a sudden the wind just changes. 10:30, 11 o'clock. I'm sixth last group. I'm about seven or eight behind Langer. six or seven shots. Yeah, eight shots behind Langer, or seven shots. And this wind just suddenly picks up and it howls. I remember someone saying to me on the caddy, oh, well, good luck for you today after last week. Oh, well, that's all I needed. And the first two or three holes were really, really hard. And I bogeyed the first. Par the second, which was a downwind par five. Number three, I bogey that. I'm two over after three. No one shot under par in the afternoon that day. And no one, there was only one other person who shot under par that day. And that's Pete Lyon early in the morning. He sort of got around before the wind got up and maybe only played the last three, four holes in the wind. So I'm going out there. I'm two over after three, and I'm thinking, just don't do what you did last week, please, for goodness sake. So I all of a sudden just start hitting fairways and greens in this howling wind, and this is before they've remodeled the lakes, and there's tea tree, and there's just doubles and triples waiting for you every time you stand up there. But I managed to sneak back a birdie here and there, and before you know it, I'm back to one under par after 12 holes, and I know this is going well. I know I'm picking up spots doing this. And after that 14th hole, the double water carry par five, and I hit the best drive hit all day. It was a wonderful drive down the middle of the fairway, and it's into the wind, and I've got a chance. I've only got 200 meters over the water. Maybe 210 to the pin, but it's just lying. I don't like the lie. And all I've got visions in my head is tin cup in it. I think as Norman did a few years later, just standing there. Just pounding. So I've gone, you know what? It's three wood all day long, but I haven't got it. So I hit a six iron down the fairway, and I think I got blasted on TV for that. I think a commentator saying, well, he's never going to win the tournament doing that. You've got to take your chances. But it was just sitting poorly. And I actually then hit a wonderful, I think, punch seven iron into the wind, into about 12 feet, hold the putt. And actually, that got me to under par. So now I'm one under par. And then I just hung on like, actually got me to two under par. And then I just hung on like crazy. I made a par on the par three, 16, I parred that, okay. 17, I scrambled a par from the green side tee tree. So I was in the trees for three, chipped it out to 15 feet, hold the for par. So now I'm going up 18. And I'm playing with Pete Senior. And as I said before, I love playing with Pete. And he's birdied seven, so he's got the honour. So I'm thinking, this is fantastic. The 18th is playing the hardest hole of the day. It's number one that day. It's a par three, but it's straight into the southerly. And I'm thinking, well, I'm going to have to probably nuke a three iron I'm thinking three iron's about the club I'm going to hit, maybe choke down a one iron. And so Pete's talking with his cat, trying to discuss where the tents all around. And he pulls out five iron. I'm going, okay, well, maybe I've got this wrong. Something, but this will be good to see. This will give me a good idea. And he hits his shot, and he's hit one of the worst shots I've seen him hit. It's gone straight right, and it's in the tents, 160 meters down the fairway. It was not a very good shot. And Pete, if you're listening, I'm sorry if I say that, but it was an awful shot. And I'm going, oh, Christ, I've learned nothing from that. That's no idea. So I hit this three iron, and I sort of came up plugged in the front trap. Got it out, and it rolled down the front. I got it up and down for par, but fast forward 45 minutes, and I'm hanging around, and everyone's just, there's train wrecks everywhere coming in this day, and Langer's now one ahead of me coming up the last. And I'm thinking, you know what? I'm in a playoff unless he just makes a par. And as soon as he hit a shot and he plugged it in the trap, I thought, well, I'm in a playoff. And as it was, he was a bunker further back than what I was, so he could only move it to the next bunker, then scolded over the green. And I mean, he's the Iceman of golf, and he is an unbelievable player, but it just shows you, for even the best, he's had an eight-shot, well, probably a five-shot lead over people. He's eight shots over me, and he's so shattered by this southerly buster that gets on the green and goes down to, he's marked his ball, then goes down to put his ball back, and he's picked his marker up before he's put his ball down. Now, I mean, that's how brutal that weather was, and how, what a cruel game it is. How it can just mess with you and can even mess with the best with your head. And so all of a sudden that, you know, once he's over the back for three, I'm thinking, well, I won it. And from the rest there, it sort of, it actually probably, it helped Michael Campbell sort of get his career going again, because he then finished second outright.
So just for the record, Bernard Langer has carded a double par on the 18th. Yeah, he's put a six on the card.
Yeah. It wasn't pretty to watch. And look, I mean, it just showed one of those days. It was really, really hard. And I was just thankful putts went in when they went to him, and I got away, especially being two over after three. I still don't know quite how I did it, but got it back. And Pete Coleman, his caddy, a few years later, I meet him in Europe, and he goes, you got my money for me? He says, that was our tournament. Where's, you got my money? So, it was one of those things.
Mate, a double par, you never know when they're going to show up. And look, take nothing away from your performance for that week, and you got the win, but did help Bernie getting a double par on the 18th. So that's what I'm bringing to that. Was my homework. I found that one out. And if we go over to you, Steve, I'm done for the night. Ask the next questions.
I'll give your statistician some raps there, mate. That's a good one, a good little nugget to pull out for that one. Keep an eye on Double Par's Instagram page for that to rock up on his page tomorrow. that's brilliant. Maybe kicking into the back end of this. So, what's on the cards for you at the moment? We talked a little bit earlier off air, but you've just had a couple of tournaments in WA, a couple of pretty decent tournaments over there. What's on the cards for you at the moment?
Well, I mean, there's not a lot. I won't carry on too long, but it's a wonderful game, and every golfer is a bit like fisherman's story. The stories just get longer and longer. But so for me, so the beginning of the year, I went across to the European Tour School. So that's now senior, and the year before, I missed my card in Europe for the senior tour by one shot, basically by taking in the last 24 holes a triple and two doubles. So I was keen to go back there again, and this year I managed to win the Tour School. So that was in late January. So I'm all set to go across there, and of course, as we know, COVID happens. So it's only just now that I still have my status for next year. So it's only just now I'm sort of starting to set a deadline for getting back to golf. You know, in terms of I've decided, let's say 25th of January, that's when I'm going to start playing golf again. Now, who knows whether it's going to be right or wrong. But up until now, it's just been mindless playing golf and that. I mean, we've been very fortunate and very lucky over here that we haven't had to endure harsh lockdowns. In fact, we've only had about 4 or 5 days where we had any sort of restrictions, really.
Yeah.
So it's just great that we're able to play the West Australian Open, the West Australian PGA. Great events, and it'll be just nice now to move into something else. Unfortunately, we can't. And now we've got another basically 2 months, and hopefully by January we'll start being able to do a few things and get going and really get back into playing. Because I said, I just love playing. I'm the practice has been, and I'm sometimes not the best practicer. I tend to worry too much about things and fidget too many things, and before you know, I'm just as lost as everyone else is with the swing. So,
yeah, there you go. Yeah, fair enough. And unfortunately, we've obviously had a few tournaments that are cancelled. Our national type tournaments have been cancelled in recent weeks. But yeah, hopefully, come sort of Christmas and January, borders start to open and you can start to get across. I heard earlier today that Tassie is going to be open to New South Wales next Friday, I think it is. So, DP, I think you're planning a trip down there, but it's going to be good to be able to see some tournaments get back up and running. I know the WA tournaments over there were obviously locked down to just WA residents only, unfortunately. Yeah. So hopefully the border starts to open back up, and that January 25th date is one where you can aim for with gusto.
Yeah, and that's all you want. We just want a little bit of certainty. It's going to be tough for golf. I mean, it's been knocked around a lot. But I don't know what it's like over on the East Coast, but golf courses have never been busier. Seems like people are falling in love with just the wonderful things we love about golf, being able to catch up with the people, talk, socialise, have a drink afterwards, and just enjoy each other's company and just slow down a bit and just enjoy golf for what it is, which is it's, some people say it's a good walk spoiled, but it's a good walk anyway, no matter what.
Yeah, exactly, mate. I think we've only really been able to sort of scratch the surface with you, with having a chat with you tonight, and I'm sure we could probably talk for plenty more on what's happened with yourself and your career over the years. And it's been great to hear a lot of insight into some of the experiences you've had with some of the greats. But mate, I really appreciate you taking the time out of your Tuesday afternoon over there and having a chat with a couple of old slashers like DP and myself.
I love doing it, and it's sort of it's a wonderful journey. It's a journey that I'll double par. Thank you very much. It's just nice to reminisce. What do they say? Old golfers never lose their balls, they hit to the broadcast box or something like that. It's pretty much that way. I've just got stories that you just love to tell.
There's plenty of old men ball analogies we could probably go into, Michael, but let's leave it on that note. It's been an absolute pleasure, mate. You're a true champion of the game. It's a shame you're not from Australia, but look, you call Australia home these days, so we'll claim you. So no, mate, thanks heaps. It's been absolutely awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks, guys.
Not a problem. We'll love to have you on again in the not too distant future and hear a little bit more and maybe scratch more of the surface off. But appreciate it, mate, and enjoy the rest of your evening over there in WA, mate.
No, thanks very much. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Cheers, mate. Take it easy. All right, DP.
Champion. Brilliant. Dead set champion. There was so much more on our run sheet. And, mate, I don't know, that story about that double par from Bernie, I think I love that one. But, mate, just the integrity of the bloke to call that penalty on himself on the 15th there. Big Ernie standing up there, tournament in the jaws, and I mean that's what golf's all about, isn't it? And you got to
it's a gentleman's
golf
game, right?
To come back and get you. Yeah,
it's a gentleman's game. Yeah, so it's cool to hear that sort of insight because you obviously see and hear about what happens from a media perspective, but getting the player's perspective, and especially I think he was talking about the laying up a little earlier as well, and mainly due to the lie, but he got hammered by the media for not taking the opportunity. Those sorts of things are really cool to sort of hear about it from a player's perspective. But I'm looking forward to jumping onto your Insta Webby thingy tomorrow and checking out Bernard Langer's double par. That's a good one. You're gonna have to give raps to your statistician there.
I mean, I don't know. Did they have scorecards back then, or are they stone tablets? Or I don't know if I'll be able to follow a record of it. But look, Michael Long, I really hadn't heard much about him, and then when we did the research for this, 13 pro wins, 4 on the tour of Australasia, 2 on the nationwide tour, played on the PGA tour for 2 seasons, like absolute champion of the game, and won his own Open in New Zealand, and as he said himself, we didn't even really touch on it, his amateur career was fantastic as well. So
Yeah, lots more that we could dig into there, but we'll have to leave it there for tonight. But DP, I'm looking forward to getting back on the podcast next week, mate. You're going to enjoy having me, or are you going to call a sickie?
No, mate, I'm keen to have you back. I'm fair dinkum. I'm sick of Nate. I'm glad Nate wasn't here tonight. He is a dead set pain in the butt, isn't he? Fair dinkum. Check your drawers. He said he was in your studio. He's probably messed around with all your equipment in there. So.
Oh no, I have to get back into the podcast studio and see what's going on. I've missed it for the last couple of weeks. I stayed tuned to last week's episode, and you'd gotten in there, and I think old Dorothy had had an extra hole. that I didn't know about before. But yeah,
I think he might have undone all those tees you tied together, mate. I think that's what he was going to do.
Yeah, brilliant. All right, love it. Well, thanks very much, guys, for joining us this evening. Take it easy, enjoy golf, and we'll see you next Tuesday on the Golf Days Australia live chats.
Au revoir.
We're three golf tragics. We're weekend packers, and we love to go to golf. And I think I
showed you guys that on the weekend.
Yes, you did. We'll get to that shortly.